welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour, Pape Machinery.
No. Really?
No, really.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And they'll take care of you with any of your John Deere products. If you need a mower, a tractor, implements, you need service parts, they do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them. Or you can give them a call, 226-9226. And they'll be glad to take care of you. Or you can catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
Yeah. Ta-da! And let's see. Today is June 11th, 2023. And, you know, it's interesting. Our guest, Greg Allison, I thought, what great timing, because the Chinese spy balloon thing, how long ago was that? That was a little bit ago. But everybody looked at that. And people had different reactions, you know, hey, we should shoot it out of the sky. Why is it flying over the country? Are they taking pictures? What's going on? If you're just joining us, you should listen to the hour just before this one, and then you'll realize that actually, like, balloons are more treacherous than we thought.
Much bigger threat than we thought.
Liam and I were talking in the break, and I'm like, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of, like, the homicide deal. You know, they always say more homicides are committed by hammers than guns. I mean, hammers are the weapon of choice because everybody has one. But who thinks of, you know, when you go out in your garage, you see the hammer, you don't go, oh, God, look out, there's the hammer. Look out, the hammer. But it's like, you know, oh, there's a balloon flying over. Oh, I wonder what that's all about. And everybody just stared at it. So Greg, was that like the hammer? I mean, was the balloon...
Well, funny you should mention hammers. I keep a big hammer in my car.
See?
Right next to my driver's seat. And I can drive on base with it, and nobody will say a thing, because the hammer's not a weapon.
See? I'm telling you, it's
full
the...
auto. A hammer is full auto. It's got an infinite magazine. and it's got a built-in silencer. The only racket is from the victim going...
Well, they come in different calibers, too, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got a large bore, full automatic, infinite magazine hammer next to my seat in my car.
See?
Thor would be proud.
I rest my case. But it's
talking
like,
about asymmetric weapons. That,
there you go.
Perfect segue. I love it.
That's the one. it's kind of funny, though, because when people saw the balloon, they thought, you know, it's a nothing burger. And now all this stuff you're telling us, and it's like, oh, crap, we should have been terrified.
Bingo, exactly. I mean, you know, oh, it's a balloon. It's a party balloon. It's fun. It's a party, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and sadly, I think that the Air Force actually did shoot down a party balloon. It was an AIM-9 missile.
Expensive balloon.
It belonged to the Northern Illinois Amateur Balloon Organization.
Oh, crap.
That you know, one of my best friends wrote the software that was controlling that balloon.
It identified as a non-threatening balloon, and look what happened.
I broke the news on that. On my YouTube channels, I broke the news on that before anybody got out there. I broke the news on that balloon as a party balloon, because I knew where it came from. At first, I didn't say whose it was, because they wanted to be quiet until the FBI knocked on their door.
Uh-oh.
It came there looking for us. But... I've got a couple of YouTube channels that a lot of people look at. Green Greg's is my prepping channel. Started out as an urban gardening channel, but when the people asked me to do a power grid defense video, then discovered I'd run a party. They discovered I had shared a couple of power grid defense conferences, and suddenly all these preppers joined my channel, and it changed the character of my channel. So what everybody wants to hear is what's going on in the world. So I cover a lot of topics about what's going on in the world, so you might want to bring me on here again to watch my channel. You might want to bring me on some more, like the AI topic, where you had it was in the news segment that followed this, that they were talking about how they had a church sermon that was written by ChatGPT. And it just strikes me kind of odd that you would have an unliving, unaware chatbot write a sermon, and then people would go there and use that for their spiritual fulfillment, you know. Well, these language models are really good at putting together words based over searching everything on the Internet and all the written documents, which they can do that, like, almost instantly. But there is no real intelligence there. It's not what we would call intelligence. It is algorithmic word association and assemblances that is brilliant and looks intelligent from our limited standpoint, but really and truly is not yet intelligent. It's definitely not sentient. So that would be leading a spiritual exercise. It's kind of, wow. You know, I'm sure it was good words because it's going to string together the best words you're going to find that, you know, that could be done in the algorithmic approach. In my college career, back many decades ago, studied how to design computers, and I know that the core of a computer is something called arithmetic logic unit, and the only thing it can do, we call it adding ones and zeros, but really it's just correlating high and low voltages through these things called registers, which are latches made from, that latch a bit in a higher low state, and they're just an assembly of a few transistors. And so with these transistors, they got people thinking that that we're doing sophisticated math. All they can do, though, is add mathematically. That's really the voltage correlation process. You do it many times, it's called multiplication. If you add a negative number, it's called subtraction. If you do it many times, it's called division. And somewhere on this, based on a simple application of what you're doing in arithmetic logic, you know, we've come up with all the simulations, all the video, everything we know on the Internet, that's its origin, which is really nothing. But that we could have a sentient system out of that is kind of mind-boggling to me. Maybe at some higher level we'll one day have systems that they'd have to have sensors and all other kind of things to become aware of the world around, which they don't have yet. But we're a long way off from a truly sentient, really understanding system. It doesn't mean that you won't have a system that won't have threatening algorithms. That's possible. But the thing I worry about is not the AI, it's the man behind the curtain. Somebody's controlling this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing I would worry about the most, the man behind the curtain. And that's also part of our AI arms race with China in particular. And there is a man behind the curtain over there. His name is Xi Jinping, and then he's got his minions, who aren't as fun as the minions on that cartoon show that some of us love to talk about.
Because they were fun.
Yeah, those were fun. And also Sweet Home Alabama played in that show. But you led off with here. So we've done mentioned two shows in the course of our conversation that pertain to the topic at hand.
Of course. So, well, you know, what is it? Life imitates art, right?
No kidding. Well, the scary thing about this, talking about asymmetry, is these balloons are cheap. You know, you mentioned in your intro to me that I did a balloon launch return vehicle, did a flight program on a Phase 1 SBR. Phase 1 SBR is only $70,000. That is intended to be a paper study for you to propose to do a hardware study. We did a hardware program. We built the balloon launch return vehicle. We actually built a subscale version of it and flew it. We did three rocket motor test stand firings to characterize the fuel grain we would use. We did... We hired Lockheed Martin to run an aero analysis for us, and that cost about $14,000. I got it real cheap. I had a buddy over at Lockheed who was one of the top managers, and he was gung-ho for helping us out. Dave Christensen, he's passed away now, God rest his soul. Great man. But he helped us out with that, and we got aero analysis run to optimize the shape of our wing body on this vehicle, and we had ground stations built. You know, I rented a boat. And on the spot market, you go out and launch this thing from Louisiana. And one of these, now I used a supply boat that occasion. I used a utility boat to launch a bigger rocket later, which is a smaller boat. Like I said, you can do small boats. We did all this, and I bought the balloon, which was about $10,000. I bought the helium, and we did all this for $70,000. And then I did a bigger program called the Cat's Prize Rocket. After that, and we did that for something on the order of $150,000. Now, this was, you know, 25, 23 years ago, but still, when you think about it, this is a fraction of the cost of an AIM-9 missile to put up a very sophisticated, the Cat's Prize rocket. We actually come up with a way to defeat what the GPS system had on then to keep you from flying missiles with the GPS. They had something called COCOM limits that would limit your ability to detect your travels with your GPS device if it was at above a certain altitude and going beyond a certain velocity. Well, you could get a waiver on one, but not most. So we got the altitude waiver, and then we figured out how through putting a one pulse per second oven control oscillator stable frequency that we output from our rocket to ground stations, we could actually track our rocket using the GPS to initiate the system and have perfect reporting. So we had to figure out how, you know, all the other countries weren't supposed to be able to do this. So working out of a garage with a few guys working part-time, that's what we were. We're engineers working on the side. This is a side venture for us. But I did pay people full-time on the catch prize. I had paid labor. And we did all that for $150,000. And we went out 200 miles out in the Gulf of Mexico on a utility boat known as the Mr. Offshore. I don't know if that boat's still in service now. Captain Blackwell. Blackwell Blackman? I forget now. Ran that boat. But anyway, we could have hit Havana, Cuba with that thing. That thing was designed to be able to go 100 kilometers. It would only take three of those to cover the entire continent of the United States. So I would expect, and what we expect, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry used to teach us, was that the enemy would hit us with a multi-pronged attack. If they were going to hit us, they wouldn't do just one thing. They would do several. They would have these hacking attacks. It would probably start with a major hacking attack. And then we saw in the Metcalf station and near San Jose back in April, I think it was April 16, 2013, somebody went in and shot up this substation. But they were really smart. They knew exactly what to shoot at. They didn't take it out to actually take it down. It was as if it was a dry run of practice. They actually cut. They went in the facility. They cut the fiber optic communications cable, and they got out of there before anybody got there. And to this date, we don't know who did it. But on the very same day that occurred was the first day that the North Korean satellite flew over Washington, D.C. And at the same time, unbeknownst to us, the North Koreans had this boat called the Chungcheong, which is just a big supply boat. It's a small cargo boat, actually. We call them a tramp steamer, running around in either the Caribbean or the Gulf of Mexico with an ISIL shipping container with two fully erect missiles on missile launchers in that shipping container.
Wow.
So they could have done a multi-pronged attack on us, and it might have been a dry run for all these. And we know that they're huge on hacking because they're hacking. They fund their system with hacking, with hacking crypto coin and things like that. That's how they fund their technology development over North Korea. They cyber attack and steal. And so if you look at that, to think that we're not vulnerable is crazy. And we also know that Donald Trump passed an executive order to prevent us from having Chinese-made components in our critical power grid systems. And for some strange reason, on day one in his office, Joe B. rescinded that executive order.
Wow.
And we don't know the full nature of what they got, but we know that Sandia National Laboratory or somebody is tearing into one of these, and they found some stuff that is highly alarming. So we believe that they've got direct cell phone technology, black box technology, and all these systems are selling us that could probably just, they wouldn't have to hack it. They already got access to it. They could probably fry our systems that way. So we got so many vulnerabilities that it is not funny. One thing I believe we can defeat all this stuff. We can deal with it. But people also need to prepare. They need to get ready for the worst of times. I cover that a lot on my Green Greg's channel. I got another channel called Galactic Greg's and all these balloon videos, because I got so many videos on Green Greg's, it might be easier to find some of my balloon videos on Galactic Greg's. Although the one you posted, I don't think I put that on, maybe I have. Yeah, that is on Galactic Greg's too. Okay. So Galactic Greg's, now there's more than one Galactic Greg's channel. Mine don't have apostrophe S. Mine is just Jerry G.S. There's one with two G's on the end. There's one, I don't know, some preacher started a channel after I did, and he don't have the S. It's just Galactic Greg's. So you got to search for Galactic Greg's, Jerry G.S., no apostrophe. The apostrophe is a comic book channel, of all things. Anyway, I'm not into comic books. So, yeah, we need to.
He's got time for that. You're dealing with balloons that are. You're dealing with dangerous balloons. Doesn't that seem weird? I mean, you think, like, the guy who works with balloons all the time, he should have time for comic books, but This whole topic is just so incredibly complicated. I mean, most people
would make for a comic book, a good comic book series.
It would.
I'm playing around the idea of writing a little novel.
I think you should.
Somebody thwarting one of these balloon attacks.
Maybe we'd be slightly smarter about it. We wouldn't be mocking about it. We have to take a really quick break.
I think I'm making a precursor to another novel project that started a few years ago. Then I'm giving an excuse to finish that project.
That's what we all need is a novel to have an excuse to finish the other novel that we were working on. That's actually a good reason just, you know, not to do a lot of chores, actually. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Greg Allison.
Happy as I am.
I can only imagine. All you do is search you on the internet, and it's like your computer just starts to smoke. You're a busy guy. We'll be right back. You can find all this information at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana message. Don't buy the corporate marijuana lies whose end game is to not pay any taxes. California has failed to control the grows. Dispensaries are selling out the back door as well as selling other illicit substances. Do we really need the damage to the environment, suicide, schizophrenia, hyperemesis, cardiac events in elderly users, drug driving crashes, genetic damage, pulmonary damage, neonatal low birth weight, and lost IQ for our youth? No, we don't. Remember, let's be careful out there.
Woke up this morning with light in my eyes, and then realized it was still dark outside. It was a light coming down from the sky. I don't know who or why. Must be those strangers that come every night. Those saucer-shaped lights put people uptight. Leave blue-green footprints that glow in the dark. I hope they get home all right. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
The birds, they knew what we'd be talking about. Okay, so the men here had questions.
Hey, I wondered if you could go back and touch a little bit more on the types of payloads that the Chinese have already developed or are under development. I know in your video you talked about some of the rocket propelled planes, bio weapons, the different types of things that they could attach to these balloons.
Yes, they have flown on now a zero pressure balloon, the kind I was talking about. I thought they would actually do an attack for an EMP launched offshore, because they're cheaper, they fly higher. They're easier to deal with than the super pressure balloons. Now, let me go back. I'm going to distinguish one thing. Super pressure balloons are good for long duration missions. They can fly for months. If you only launch it from China, it's a perfect platform. If you only launch it offshore, something you'll detonate, you'll use a zero pressure balloon. Now, from zero pressure balloons, they have flown packages that had multiple flight vehicles that you drop attached to them, and these were glide vehicles, and they looked like they were set up to have a rocket motor in, like my balloon launch return vehicle. These were like miniature versions of their hypersonic DF-17 weapon system, which, by the way, DF-17 can carry nuclear weapons. And the Chinese have just stabilized a new explosive, I don't know, like a CL-20 or something. I've got to go back and research that. They've got a very high explosive. It's kind of like nitroglycerin, but it's unstable. They've stabilized it. And it's a very extreme high explosive. So China has got a lot of stuff in the repertoire for weapon systems. But they practiced a lot of this stuff. They had three different styles, versions, designs of this glide vehicle. So they were trying to optimize, doing an actual test to figure out which one performed best. So they're already testing platforms to launch from balloons that give you cross range. If one thing I didn't say or fully spell out is those higher altitude winds, and you know, there's a season where they all blow from west to east, just like the normal jet stream. But there's something called turnaround where they stop. You can watch a balloon straight up and let it hover. And that has applications, too. It's actually a good attack time. It's about the time it's perfect for going over the Chinese Strait. If you wanted to go somewhere, you just drop altitude a little bit and catch a wind that's moving, drop some ballast or let some gas loose or something like that. You know, if you're going to go up, drop ballast. If you're going to go down, release some gas. But they could actually control which way they're going by catching the right wind, but they could hover almost for a while. Now, if you are launching in summer at the higher altitude, you'll go from east to west at the stratospheric altitudes that I'm talking about, you know, 80 to 120, 140,000 feet. So if they want to maximize just drift over the east coast, they might do it in the summertime. If they want to be able to hit all the coasts that need some directional assist, they would do it in the turnaround season. If they want to drift over from the west coast, most of the year, rest of the year, it's good for that. So, but if you're on the coast where the wind's blowing away from the coast, still, if you launch it early, get a little bit closer in the coast, and especially if you use something like my balloon launch return vehicle or that DF-17-looking thing they had, or any kind of rocket like my Cat's Prize rocket, they could get altitude and cross range. And like I said, three Cat's Prize-type rockets they could hit. You know, you can cover the entire continent of the United States, launch one from the West Coast, one from the East Coast, one from the Gulf Coast. So I would expect they would launch a few balloons. If you had, like, two ships off each thing, you could totally cover the coastal areas with EMPs from the 30-kilometer altitude or a little higher. I think they would go to 120,000 feet, actually. So, but if you launch from... we see stuff still coming from China, but at least with them we got time to sit, but it's still going to be harder to get. That's where you may want to use your Aegis or something like that. But Aegis is very expensive. I think I went off on the tangent. Your original question was?
Oh, just the different types of weapons that they could.
Oh, yeah, different types of weapons. So they have practiced drop-in drone swarms. Now, drone swarms could attack troops on the ground directly. You could attack armored vehicles. You see drones in use in the Ukraine to much advantage in taking out armored weapon systems, ships, smaller ships. You wouldn't take an aircraft carrier out with that, but you might with something that looks like a DF-17. If they're in a theater of combat, like our aircraft carriers want to be far enough off that we think they're fairly safe, but they got to be close enough that we got range to get our aircraft to the target areas that if we were fighting China, Taiwan. And so the problem is their DF 19, 18 missiles, they can actually, DF 21, they can actually reach twice the distance of our aircraft. So we are vulnerable. With our aircraft carriers needing to get inside that missile range. Now, we think, okay, well, we got a phalanx of different weapons that we can use to take these missiles out incoming. But they've already, China just did an exercise where they did three volleys at our aircraft carriers, and they believe we can totally exhaust all of our countermeasures and take out the aircraft carrier. But we are counting on, well, they won't find us because we move fast, and by the time the weapon gets to us, the aircraft carrier will be somewhere else. But the problem is, if you launch a weapon from a balloon, it knows where you're at already. It's already seeing you. And second most, that balloon is a recon balloon, could actually identify your exact location, and even if you move and zigzag, it could send update coordinates to that carrier killer missile that's coming in from the Chinese mainland. So that gives them a decided advantage in the battlefield to being able to take out our carriers. Our carriers are at grave risk in a war with Taiwan. We need to reconsider this because they've got the weapon systems to exhaust most of our onboard systems, and their practice run had them taking out the entire escort fleet and the carrier. all the destroyers, everything in the entire carrier group is what the Chinese are practicing to take out, and they believe they've developed the means to do that. And in my humble opinion, they didn't say this or advertise it, but I think the balloons may be a key component of that in identifying the location, targeting, and providing target update data to any incoming missiles, and perhaps even missiles to strike with from the and then all the, you know, they may go for the Aegis destroyers themselves with those things, and then leave the bigger ones for the aircraft carrier. So our entire carrier group is at risk, and these kind of weapon systems would play a from a balloon could play a big role in that, and also against ground forces. In here in the United States, they could attack our military bases, key components of it. You know, that spy balloon probably told them where a lot of our key communication systems were, and because they had intel reconnaissance that could pick up all these signals. With the kind of signals that, capabilities they had, they could tell who our commanders were when they were using their cell phones, and maybe even figure out where some of these people would be located, what their routines are. They could target individuals if they have the right kind of intelligence systems. And I would expect if they were tackling them, we may have some spy balloons over the country at that point, too, possibly. So it's what they could do from these. And weapons release, the United States back in the late 40s and 50s was practicing, and I show a couple of different, very different approaches the United States used back then for practicing releasing rust spores that could take out your wheat crops. There's also a black fungus that can take out your corn crops. China has probably also practiced the same kind of thing. If it take out our power, take out our crops, America would be devastated. You know, I think the actual fatalities would be worse than what the EMP Commission to the Congress reported back when they said 9 out of 10 people would be lost due to societal collapse. So they did not take into account biological attacks. They did not take into account what would happen with the spent fuel rod pools at the nuclear power plants. We like to think the reactors, we could save them. But what you're going to have problems with is we got actually far more radioactive material sitting in the cooling pools, which are outside the containment building of these nuclear power plants. Far more radioactive material. These are in the forms of the fuel rods. When they're still hot, they have to be put in the pools. Well, the pools are normally covered with 20 foot of water, and we got backup generators to cool them, so we think everything is cool. But in a grid down situation, you're not going to have the fuel to bring the fuel to the generators to keep them running. They evaporate at least 160 gallons a minute out of these pools.
Wow.
And even though they're covered with 20 foot of water, it's just a matter of days before it evaporates. The problem with these hot fuel rods are they have a zirconium alloy cladding on them. Metal would be too brittle, most metal, so they use this zirconium. It's called zircaloid. Unfortunately, when this zircaloid is hot, it will be hot. It burns on contact with air. And so I've had a nuclear engineer argue, oh, that don't happen. I got zircaloid sitting on my desk. Yeah, well, sure, you can, because that's not what's been in the nuclear plant. But the Sandia National Laboratories did some test runs on this, and those things burnt slap up. I got the reports. I got the pictures, the photos, the data, and that stuff burnt slap up. So what's going to happen is this stuff will and if you had a nuclear war, everybody thinks how bad a nuclear war would be, but most of the radiation will be died off in 2 weeks. You know, the radiation dies down pretty fast. You get some nasty stuff like your strontium-90, which will still be laying around for a good time, and that goes in your bones. If you ingest it, it will because it has an affinity for calcium. It's on the same series of the periodic table, and it would stay in your bones and radiate you forever, as long as you're alive. Well, at least not forever, but it's a lifelong affliction if you pick that stuff up. But there's ways to mitigate that. There's ways to not get into that. But still, most radiation is gone in 2 weeks, except now with the nuclear power plants, they spent fuel rod pools. They could be gassing the stuff up in the atmosphere for years. Years. So you got to deal with years and years of output out of this pool, this stuff, you know, sitting in a slag in the bottom, burning and smoldering, and putting this radiation all over the place. It would be extremely nasty. I think that is going to add significantly to the death toll. And another thing they didn't count on, they thought all the farmers grew enough food to feed themselves. They did back when I was a kid. When I was a kid, every farmer had a huge garden. But now most of them don't. And most of them are growing market stuff they sell from the market, not to grow from themselves. And so you'll find maybe a few little garden patches here and there. I did a video where I drove through South Georgia and here over North Alabama in very rural areas just counting farmhouses, and I would drive for miles and not see a single garden. And I backed that up by looking from Google Earth. So this whole idea that people are not resilient, people are not prepared for what's to come. Well, you need to grow a garden. And also show leaves. And you need heirloom seeds because you got to harvest. You ain't going to be able to go to the store anymore. So you need to have seeds that you can actually reap, harvest the seeds and replant them and get the same seed back. Hybrid right. plants, because you built the big hybrid tomatoes, will not work. You're going to get some gnarly thing back. So you need good seed, open source pollinated, air pollinated, heirloom seeds. And I got a couple of vendors that I use, I'm affiliate market with. It's on my list on a lot of my videos of True Leaf Market and Eden Brothers. And it helps me if people go use my links. They won't pay a penny more for them. But those are the kind of seeds you need to plant. You need to grow. I got videos on my channel showing you how to grow a garden, how to prepare the beds. You won't be able to go to the store to buy fertilizers, buy plants. None of the stuff you like to go to the store to help you with gardening, they won't be able to do. But with worm products, you can actually mitigate it by making your own worm tea, by worm castings. You don't need artificial fertilizers in it, so I don't use any of that at all. I use no chemicals in my growing at all. Everything I grow is pure natural, organic, beyond organic, because organic allows you to use a lot of stuff that I don't use. I'm totally natural in the way I grow stuff. So get worms. Sometimes I sell worms. I'm not selling. At the moment, I'm not resuming it. But if I don't, I will put other links eventually to other places for people to get these. You need to look at our nation needs to become resilient. We need to be self-reliant. And individuals need to become self-reliant. Homestead is very important. This is how a rocket scientist become a worm farmer, by the way. I realize it's important for self. I realize the threats our society faces. I was able to analyze that and go, holy smoke. Fortunately, I grew up on a farm. So I'm a redneck and a rocket scientist all combined in one, which gives me some unique capabilities here. Redneck rocket scientist, you know. So, you know, I know about farming, hunting, trapping, fishing, and country boy can survive kind of, you know, Hank Williams Jr. kind of attitude.
if we did have an EMP, what effect does an EMP have on the ozone layer?
Well, it wouldn't so much be the EMP in that case, but that'd be the actual nuclear burst itself. It can disrupt the ozone. If you have enough, if you had a several nukes set off, you would definitely damage the ozone layer. And that's, and they claim that even a small exchange of a nuclear warlock, maybe in between India and Pakistan, would create damage to ozone layer. A full-scale nuclear war, it may be a several EMP devices could do some, but a full-scale nuclear war would devastate the ozone layer. It wouldn't totally wipe it out, but it would wipe it out so bad that you would get cancers and sunburn and stuff like that if you were outside in the heat of the day, anywhere. You wouldn't want to be outside except maybe early in the morning or late in the afternoon when the sun angle for the atmosphere is long. You know, nocturnal mammals. You'll want to be almost nocturnal. You'd want to stay indoors, but that's going to devastate crops. You need to have seeds in storage. You need to buy extra seeds and store them. So, because that was the ozone would replenish in time. It'll take a few years. So you need to think like Joseph, and you know, back in the days of when he was in Egypt, you know, storing food for 7 years. You need to store food and store seeds. You know, we're in the good times. Bad times could be coming, and they can last several years. So maybe that was a object lesson to us for what could be bad times around the corner. And, you know, with the tensions with China over Taiwan, with the tensions we got with Iran, with the tensions we got with Russia, this idea that these couldn't do this. Look, I did this stuff. I did these balloon operations as an amateur group operating on my spare time. Out of a shoestring budget, I found it exceedingly easy to do. So actually, terrorist groups, if they could get their hands somehow on some of these loose nukes, and we were told that some of these backpack nukes that Russia had have come up missing. We were told there were like 80 of them that they had pre-planted in the United States at one time. that came out. So there's a lot of stuff that just isn't talked about. There are some other nuclear devices that are missing. And we don't know what happened when the Soviet Union fell apart, and they had no physical security on a lot of their nuclear materials, nuclear sites. It's been rumored that Iran actually got two full-blown launchers from Kazakhstan before Kazakhstan gave up their nukes. That's a rumor that I've heard from a couple of different sources, and one I heard years ago, and I've heard it confirmed more recently. I heard two originally. I've heard it was a little bit more since then. So I don't know what's the real case on that. You know, rumors and rumors of war, rumors and bloomers, they both stink, you know. He says we can't have a little fun. You know, if you don't laugh at doomsday, you're going to cry.
Well, that's so the thing. You can't get too, yeah. There's, and I think that's why your YouTube channels, as you've been saying them, I've been adding them to the page so that people will have them. It's good to have people who know what's going on, but people who aren't so... far into it that they can't even, you know, they can't convey a thought because they're just so angry or scared or
more
whatever.
Bad news.
Well, yeah, more bad news.
You know, here's my approach. I don't think there's anything we can't solve. I'm an engineer. You know, we live by trying to solve stuff. We you see a problem, well, how do you fix it? Whether it's either a problem that you fix through engineering or a problem you fix politically. I'm the oddball engineer in that most engineers abhor politics, but I've also had to understand that everything starts with policy decisions in a government. And, a lot of people, especially in my prepper community, you know, see the government as being totally against us, but still, no matter how myopic they may be, those politicians want to vote, just like that song by Charlie Daniels of he's saying the politician wants another vote. What was the name of that song? Anyway, that aside, brain lock here. The situation is that we can have impact on them, even if they want to go a different direction. We can still drive it some because they still want to do whatever they got to do to get that vote. So if they see a groundswell of public opinion, they're going to have to move to it. And I found that small organizations can have an outsized impact on Congress, and I discovered that back in the years when I was chairman of the policy committee of the National Space Society, and even prior to that, when I ran the phone tree of the National Space Society, we had major impacts on votes. At the old Five Society, when it had only 5,000 members, kept the United States from signing what was known as the Moon Treaty, which the Carter administration and State Department were backing. And we saw this as being anathema to the ability of private enterprise to ever develop space. We never thought the government would ever have deep enough coffers to really develop it. And why do you want to develop space? Because you need your eggs in more than one basket.
Yeah.
The whole idea was
you guys were right on that.
In space, permanently in space habitats, kind of like Elon talks about, but we were a little bit beyond that. There was a guy named Gerard Kilmell had this notion for rotating free-floating habitats. You probably seen Jeff Bezos actually picked that up, showed some of his video not too long ago. But this is not a Bezos concept. It started with Gerard Kilmell in the 1970s.
Hold that thought, Greg, because we should. I can see Bill's percolating five questions. I can see them on his face. We will do them right away when we come back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Against the sky of doom, tell me you see them. Because what's inside of me is invisible to most, even in clear view. I'm sending out a signal to the possibility of you. 'Cause right at this moment, I know you're connected to a part of me that I don't even know myself.
Hey, Greg, before we run out of time, I understand you had some involvement in the Artemis program. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, I was a system safety engineer for avionics, an avionics system safety engineer on that program. So I've worked a lot of space. My career has been aerospace. My career has been engineering. My career has been electrical engineering, robotic systems engineering, and system safety, especially in the area of avionics. So I'm an avionics subject matter expert with regards to system safety. So there's probably some things that I probably shouldn't talk about on that project. So there's some things that do concern me, you know, having seen how the sausage is made. But we did have a successful mission. Rockets are risky. Long ago, when I was developing my own rockets, I came up with what I call Allison's Laws of Rockets. I say rockets go boom. That's law one. Law two, rockets have always gone boom. And law three, rockets always will go boom. Our job is to make them go boom less often, to make them safer. But one thing to bear in mind is reliability is inversely proportional to parts count. Of course, you want redundant systems to give you more parts to increase safety, though. So it kind of goes against, but it's a little different function, design margin, things like that. So, when I look at it, a rocket's got 33 rocket engines under it. It's the most powerful booster. It's got like twice the power of the fuel of the Saturn V. That thing scares me. But, you know, like the space starship that Elon Musk launched, you know, that thing is a beast. The N1 rocket that the Russians built detonated at the pad and flung a considerable debris for 6 miles.
Wow.
So one of those is to go off near Boca Chica. It would take you out Port Isabel, just north of it. Well, not take it out, but it would throw a lot of stuff up there. So they need to be very careful. They need to take those things out to sea to launch, in my humble opinion. They've got a couple of barges, they got a couple of oil platforms they could do this from. Hopefully they will transition to that soon. Because, you know, they're still in the development phase, and that's where you got most of your mishaps is while you're in development phase. I've got great hope for their system, though, because it could lower launch costs to being dirt cheap. It would greatly open the frontiers for what can be done in space if the Starship can pull off a fraction of their objectives. So I've got great hope there, but with great hope, there's also great peril, and I hope they pay attention to that and more attention. The problem with any engineered system is the people that build it, to them it's their baby, and their baby's beautiful, and there's nothing wrong with it because we did everything to fix it, but they tend to overlook a lot of things that they should not otherwise overlook. The people that develop a system think in success space. This is why it's going to work. People like me think in failure space. This is why it's not going to work. This is where it can go wrong, and here's what you need to do about it. And you need to go back to the engineer and think, how do you fix it? So I get focused on that kind of stuff. And it's kind of the same way with our power grid. It's kind of the same way with the vulnerabilities of our civilization across the spectrum, food supply, power. You have a lot of advertising for agriculture, so you know I do some videos on food supply issues, supply chain issues. All these things count. They all matter for the state of the security of our society, and we've got to start paying more attention to it because we have normalcy bias, and we think that everything is going to continue as is. The truth of the matter is nothing ever continues as is. Everything changes, so normalcy bias is very myopic. It's short-sighted. We've got to be able to think ahead and correctly anticipate what could go wrong. For example, Fukushima, well, you know, these burn walls are high enough. We're good. It's supposed to be good for a 1,000-year earthquake, but they didn't really research in time and left it to marker. They didn't believe the markers their ancestors left on the hillsides around and said, don't blow this marker. And when they had that tsunami in March 2011, it overswept the berms and took out those backup generators. Thankfully for Japan, they had fire trucks and their entire system went down like a nationwide EMP would give you. And so they were able to at least keep the spent fuel rods cool by pumping water on them from the fire trucks. Now, you go to Zaporizhia right now, the water level, you know, somehow they didn't think that dam would ever break. Duh. Well, the dam is broke, and now the water level is below the intakes of the water to pump water on the spent fuel rods they got there. They've got a problem because also they're dealing with power outages there. They have, and I've done some videos on this on my channel, they're dealing with power outages, and they're in a war zone. So having the ability just to pump fuel to get the diesel fuel to the backup generators is problematic. And those backup generators are supposed to be pumping water out of the lake that ain't there anymore. So can they have enough fire trucks to keep those huge pools clean, get enough water to them? They don't have as big a trucks as we got here in America. The tanker trucks are not as big. They don't even have semi-trucks like we have here. I've been to Moscow. And I didn't see, I've been all over the streets and highways around Moscow traveling around, and I did not see a single semi-truck the entire thing time I was there. Basically, you'd see something like a two-ton truck, maybe two-and-a-half-ton truck, with a tarp over the back, you know, like military trucks here.
Yeah.
That was their primary mode of moving cargo around. It's nothing like we got over here. They just don't have the systems, the infrastructure. And so they're going to be very, very challenged to keep that place from irradiating a lot of Russia and Europe. So I'm really concerned about that right now. I'm saying, you know, it could be done, but they need to make it a priority and jump through hoops to make sure that they can do this. And they got to be really smart in the middle of the war zone. I'm not sure if they're smart enough or resilient enough to do what they got to do. Time will tell.
Yeah.
But we got a lot of risk in society. We're just not thinking things through well enough, ahead enough. And you need to get more safety professionals involved in things like that. You know, my rockets I developed, launch altitude balloons, were air-launched hybrid rockets, just like Spaceship One, which won the Katz Prize. I mean, X Prize, which I actually was a competitor in also. But a lot of my guys worked on that. They used the technology from this HART Katz Prize rocket to help work that system. So I got a rocket motor sitting here next to next to my knee that I use as a computer stand. That was the daddy, basically, of the Spaceship One motor, or the granddaddy of the Spaceship Two motor. One of my good friends died in a cold flow test of that. So you say I had a friend die in a static discharge, probably, or over temperature, supercritical situation, and a cold flow test, which most people don't think of a cold flow test. It's just things you don't think about to get you. That cost 3 lives. And they've already lost 4 lives in the Virgin Galactic Venture.
Right.
One being, you know, the guy pulled the handle accidentally that caused the shuttlecock mechanism that was supposed to feather the craft for a re-entry upon ascent launch, and the thing just broke apart. One guy survived that, and that's a miracle. One of the pilots actually survived that. But you know,
how much bigger is that Musk rocket than like the Saturn?
It's twice as big as the Saturn V.
Is it really?
N1. It's got twice as much fuel as the Saturn V. The Saturn V or N1 rocket, if they go off, are like a small nuke.
Yeah, they're huge.
It's twice as big. It's got a lot of fuel. So
wow.
It can have a really, you know, when you saw it detonate up over the ocean, over the Gulf of Mexico, it depleted most of its fuel. That was, you know, it was a good thing, you know. And, you know.
And that was planned, though.
The heck out of the, huh?
That was planned, though, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, this part of the flight termination system, they terminated that flight because they couldn't get the thing to stage.
Right.
You know, critical events like staging are where you have a lot of accidents because, you know, a lot of things have to happen. You got to work exactly right. A rocket is like a chain. Every link has got to be good for it not to go boom.
Right.
A really long chain.
I didn't realize it was that much.
Reliability.
I didn't realize it was that big.
Do what?
I say I didn't realize it was that much bigger.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a beast. If Musk believes that he could, at least from his operating point, his operating cost, he can fly those things once he gets them turning around and launch for like $9 a pound to orbit. We're talking... you would be able to fly to Mars for something like buying a really nice home on Earth.
Wow.
You'll have to work most of your life to be able to pay for it. But it's the same level and scale that our earlier ancestors settled America. They had to save. They came over and they worked for indentured servants for maybe 10 or 15 years, basically slaves, to pay off their transit to come here. But it's the same order. So space colonization I'm not sure Mars is really the best target, but, you know, I'm in favor of those free-floating habitats that you'd manufacture and have the controlled environment of one gravity and Earth-like environment inside of it. It takes a little bit longer to build that, but you could build smaller versions of that. Years ago, I come up with a notion for taking 12 spatial external things and building a habitat for 100 people to float in low Earth orbit. So you could do that. Maybe by using, you know, keeping that first stage in orbit from the Starship, the heavy booster, if you can get it all the way to orbit. I know you can do it with the core tank of the Space Launch System. The Space Launch System is a very expensive booster. You know, we're talking $2 billion a launch. They're talking about $2 million a launch with a Starship carrying a lot more payload. So there's a big difference. It's a radical approach. And, I think SpaceX has accomplished miracles, but, you know, they need to keep their heads screwed on in terms of the risk that they're dealing with. You know, they underestimated what would happen to their pad, and they just really just ate the place out there. You know, they blew a crater where this thing launched, and that stuff scattered all the way to Port Isabel. You know, they had concrete and rock dust everywhere.
Well, Virgin Atlantic kind of learned a lesson on that last disaster they had. That was very costly. I think it almost put them out of the whole space race, didn't it?
Well, listen, space is difficult. It's difficult to reach space and do the things that have to be done.
That's a great place to segue to the next time we talk to Greg. This is going
to
cut.
So much to talk about. Y'all need to get me back on.
We're going to
talk fully about countermeasures for these balloons.
For heaven's sakes. We're going to do it again really soon.
Oh, yeah, and there's a bill. Hey, I did have some success.
Uh-oh.
I already got a bill in the Senate. Senate Bill 1631.
Email it to me and I will add it to the website, because this thing's going to cut us off automatically with the news. But you are amazing, and we love it. Greg Allison has been our guest.
On,
you can
Greg.
Find everything at wethepeopleradio.us. It's a cool place.